Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is a very fine day, Monday, October 21st, 2013. But first, let's get started today with the market report. Well, gold struggled all day, but we're still looking at gold just really unchanged, $1,317, down less than a dollar. Silver is up 27 cents at $22.32. Platinum was down a dollar at $1,441. Palladium was up another 1.25%, up $9 at $753. The USDX today trading slightly higher today, 0.08 at 79.69, not as strong as it was in earlier trade. Finally had oil break down through 199, down $1.68. Paper markets today, little changed. You know, everybody's waiting for the September jobs report, as you know, they were unable to publish that information, saying they didn't have accurate information, no one to do it during the shutdown. Of course, we're not going to get accurate information anyway, so it's like, what's the point? But yeah, the Dow basically unchanged, down 8 points at 15,391. The NASDAQ was up 6 at 39.20. S&P unchanged, 1742. And the 10-year yield creeped back up to 2.61, up 0.02 on the day. But the S&P did set a record high, even at a, you know, just a 0.13 up. It would still beat the old record. So makes it sound really, really good, but I don't suspect that it is. A lot of things going on. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
How are you?
Oh, all right. News on the market. Again, the U.S. dollar index is down to 79.70 on the indicator I'm looking at right now.
That's close.
Yeah, I understand that. But it is below that 80 mark, and we'll watch and see what happens. It looks to me like there's at least a high probability that we'll remain below 80, or certainly below 81 for, who knows, sometime into the future. And it'll be interesting to see, because this in part may be a reflection of what happened with the debt ceiling debate and controversy and all the rest. And has the dollar been permanently wounded? And if so, has the value of the dollar been permanently, you know, diminished? And if so, what's going to happen? In fact, the larger point is how far down can the dollar go? If it really has dropped below 80, how far down can it go? And this isn't anything extraordinary down at 79.7. This is not cause for alarm, hope, or anything else, because we've had dollars down as low as 72 in the last, I don't remember, probably in 2011, be there, but thereabouts, and maybe okay. since then. Mm-hmm. But so it's not, you know, it's not a big message, but it's something to keep an eye on.
Well, it shows that, you know, just to some degree, I mean, it does show eventually the true state of the economy, the true numbers will appear, and their ability to control, manipulate, does come to an end. They might continue to manipulate, but they certainly don't have the same impact as they once did, as this can, mm-hmm. as this whole situation begins to grow and to grow. And they released today that all those that went on furlough certainly will get paid for the 16 days that they didn't work. But some of the guys that filed unemployment, they get to keep that too. And it'll be different from
plus whatever they got in tips. They get to keep whatever they receive in tips from you know, the people that they regulate. You could regulate a major corporation, sometimes they will thank you and show their appreciation by giving you a gratuity.
Well, these are the day by, you know, 9 to 5 employees who were furloughed.
You never know. You can get lucky. Yeah, lucky. You never know, Melody. Yeah. Well, you can get lucky as a government employee. You might get a tip from time to time, a little gratuity.
Well,
I don't think you have to declare it on your income tax.
The point is the taxpayers get to pay the folks who knew all along they would probably be reimbursed for their 16 mm-hmm. days. Mm-hmm. And I saw one argument where the one lady who is four, she says, well, the average was only $498. These poor people didn't know what to expect. They didn't know how long they'd be laid off. They didn't know how long and the turmoil that they went through and blah, blah, blah. They deserve to keep their $400 and $500. And it's like, oh God, life.
I go through a lot of turmoil myself, yeah. Melody.
I do too.
And I hope the IRS, if depending on how we file income tax and rest, that I may have some significant deductions because of all the turmoil. Yeah,
exactly.
I have a lot of turmoil in my life, and therefore I'd like to have my income tax, my gross up, and my income taxes down. No sense in sending money back to government if you've suffered any turmoil.
Oh, so, you know, again, it's just the same old baloney. And, of course, I've seen a lot of things that are, they're already heating up for next year's elections. Get rid of those GOPers, get rid of the Tea Partiers, and,
they try.
It's to be
right
an interesting
now, but here's
year.
The thing about it. Here is the thing about it. Right now, they're trying to make hay while the sun shines, and for the moment, they can make a lot of argument to get rid of the Tea Party people and the Republicans and so on. But we are going to go back to re-encounter that debt ceiling again in the next 90 days, right, maybe 60 days in part. We're going to have another bump in the road before this is done, and when we do, what's going to happen then? It's going to pretty much wipe out the memory of whatever happened in the last couple of weeks. And hard to say who's going to do what at that time, if anything.
Well, I already saw that there's been legislation that that were, you know, the Congress can display their displeasure at increasing the debt ceiling, but it's going to get done.
No, it's of course it's going to get done.
So,
they can express their
displeasure. To me, it's a non-event.
It's not just that.
It's going to be an opportunity
for political theater.
Exactly.
It's an opportunity for everyone to stand up and say, well, I am highly opposed to this, knowing that under the new rules that are supposedly coming in, if I understand correctly, the president will be able to simply waive the debt ceiling whenever he feels like
sure.
it. All right? And if the Congress doesn't like it, they can vote against it. They can veto his increase in the debt ceiling.
But it doesn't make any
sense. And then he can veto whatever law they've passed. And then Congress has to come back and overcome his veto with two-thirds of the Congress has to vote to overcome Obama's veto and actually sustain the debt ceiling, refuse to allow, and prevent the debt ceiling from rising. And the net result is it will provide a wonderful forum for people to stand up and say, well, I'm vehemently opposed by this increase in the debt ceiling by President Obama. And they can make their speech knowing that there's nothing that's going to be done about it. No one, they're not going to be able to overcome Obama's veto on this stuff. All right, so he's going to have the last word, but they're going to be able to take the floor and say Obama is, whatever, because he's putting us too deeply into debt. Everybody can be against it, and yet it's going to take place.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So my predictions, if they hold this thing together, Democrats will take it in November, and then Katie bar the door. Get ready. Get ready, folks.
I'm not pessimistic in that to that degree. I think there's a genuine, I've said it in a couple of weeks now. I think there is a genuine movement for limited government in this country.
No.
It's just beginning. It isn't self-aware just yet, but I think it explains a number of different movements, and we see it at the state level and the local level and even in the congressional level, and I think it's going to grow. And that being the case, I think we're going to see more. I don't know how many Republicans will be elected in the next election, but I suspect that we're going to see a much higher percentage of Tea Party members who are elected as Republicans. I think the Tea Party.
No, because I think the media will really dictate, and certainly the media will be able to. Of course, we know the side that they're going to be on. I hope you're right, but I think in order for the Republicans to get in there and overtake the Democrats, I think something's going to have to happen. I mean, there will have to be something in order to change, but to change people's mind and vote Republican. But if this goes on as is, no, it's going to be Democrats. I mean, there's no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats anyway. The final outcome is, the destruction of this country, and along with our economic system and our economy and people's hard-earned money that they worked for so long, because that's already been written in. It's just a matter of who takes credit of fixing it, who takes the blame for creating it and having it fail. So, I mean, they're both the same.
Not who takes the blame. Who do we dump the blame on, Melody? Whoever is responsible, I guarantee they won't hardly be identified, let alone be compelled to take the blame. The question is, who will be the patsy? Somebody's got to take the heat for this, and we'll find somebody.
They'll blame Bush.
Yeah, they might blame you or me before it's done.
They blame Bush for the shutdown, so which is funny.
Well, it's on one level. I voted for I supported Bush. All right, when he ran for election, because he said what I really wanted to hear. And it took me a while to realize. I didn't think he was all that bright, but I thought with Cheney there, they'd keep Bush on a fairly intelligent course. And then I began to realize that Bush had what he said and what he did for me were just not consistent. I began to realize that I've been fooled, I've been conned. And there were times when if I had been in the same room with Bush and there had been Secret Service people guarding him, I'd still have taken a shot at trying to lay hands on his throat. That man made me angry.
Well, I
couldn't imagine that they would elect someone. Whoever followed him, I thought they had to be an improvement on Bush. And all I can say is I'm less prone to anger today than I was when Bush was in office, because otherwise I'd still be ranting about Obama. I think it's hard to believe, but he's worse than Bush. And who's coming next?
Oh, my.
That's what really gets me talking to myself. it seems like we're having a contest here in this country to see which generation can elect the biggest villain to the White House. And maybe there's going to be some sort of award or something like that. We're going to say, oh, wow, we thought Obama was bad, but we got to admit, you know, whoever gets elected in 20, boy, this one is bad.
Here's a doozy. Yeah, it is. And you're right. I believe the only reason Bush got elected was because of Cheney. Cheney was strong in all those debates. He showed power. I mean, it was something that you'd want to see. And
yeah, but even Cheney, he's another villain. I don't know. Can we get anybody run for the presidency is not a villain? We should have a third party, the non-villain party, you know?
Well, unfortunately, most of America they only find out that they're villains after the fact. But anyway.
Well, we only admit they're villains after the fact. Mm. But the truth of the matter is you look at the system and you look at how it operates and you can't sit there and claim to be surprised. Here I am, grown man, the rest of that sort of thing. I claim to be shocked, I tell you, by, you know, George Bush and then Obama. I don't know. It's just foolishness. You know, I have to admit it's a certain amount of foolishness on my part to even suppose that we could find somebody who would run for the presidency in this country who would be nominated by the Republicans or by the Democrats, I don't care which party, who wasn't, in his heart, just another villain. Where do we find a good guy to run for public office right now? I know you can down at the lower levels. It's not impossible. But as you rise up the ladder, you get to the top, and you've got to be a certified psychopath to get yourself into a position of power in this country. And it's, what do you do about it?
Well, we talk about the position of power in this country, but we're seeing it in countries around the world, particularly the European countries. I mean, look at them. Look at them. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know who's following who and who is leading by example. It's they're just as bad over there. And so the Europeans, they don't do any better.
No, I understand that.
I think the difference with the population, with the citizens of the European nations, is the citizens understand how politics work. And they understand but they have a little bit different way of looking at things and so forth. But they know their politicians and they know their crooks. And you know, maybe we'd become the same way.
Well, we seem to be heading in that direction because at the moment, at least, I'm unable to see, you know, any serious evidence that people in positions of power in this country, you can rely on them to be honorable, honest, ethical, working for the best interest of the American people. All that just sounds like so much naive. You know, you feel like a little kid. I feel like a child saying those sorts of things as if they were possible. I would expect the average politician to look at me and just kind of smirk and say, "Why, you poor, deluded fool." And one of the reasons, and I've harped on this for years, really, the political campaign contribution laws. That's what corrupts this system ultimately. It allows people in positions of political power to accept political campaign contributions in a way where they are nothing but bribes. And they sit back and say, oh, this is lawful, and oh, this isn't really a bribe, but it is. It's a bribe. And they are serving whoever pays them the most money rather than serving the people who vote them into office. And that's, if we could change political campaign contribution laws in a way that restricted all of the politicians in this country from taking contributions from anyone who's not registered to vote for that politician, all right? You can take whatever money you want from the people within your district, within your state. If you're voting for running in a statewide office, fine. Take money from within your state, but no one outside of your state. And you can't take money from a union, and you can't take money from a corporation because the union's not registered to vote, the corporation's not registered to vote, and the only people they should be able to take money from are those who are registered to vote for that politician. If you can't vote for that guy, you can't give him any money. Now, under those circumstances, we could have a system that wasn't so bad. Might be a big improvement. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Melody hasn't told me yet.
I just want to read.
Do you not?
Oh, we're going to have a special tomorrow. It's going to be one humdinger of a special. Folks need to tune in tomorrow as we will carry on the special for tomorrow. However, all orders for this month, your name will be placed in a drawing. We will have two separate prizes. One is a Min State 62 $10 Indian gold piece. And then we also have a tube, which are 21-ounce Silver Eagles 2013. They will be the prizes given away to the drawing. We'll have one of the staff pull the names out of a basket that we're collecting. So make sure you get your purchase here at Discount Gold and Silver. We got some great prices. Our shipping is fantastic. Our service is, people aren't used to the type of service that we give because you can't get it anywhere else. So they must give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, our radio programs are archived there. So,
one other thing. You may not be recalling or remembering. You may be misremembering, as our former president G.W. used to say. We've got a guest tomorrow, a lady named Donna Lee. She's going to be discussing some of the discoveries she's made about how her county operates in Florida. And it turns out that her county, if I understand correctly, is a limited liability corporation. It's not really part of the government. It's a private entity. She's laid hands on a number of insurance policies for the county. And it turns out that some of the insurance policies, the beneficiaries are the county commissioners. And if anything happens, by the insurance policies are being paid by, guess who? The taxpayers. But guess who is going to receive the money in the event that there's a problem? And it will be the county commissioners. Right? They will personally profit in the end, in the event that there are certain problems within the context of their county.
Well, don't give out all the details.
There's plenty more details. There's more than, I mean, Donna has been a remarkable, I've talked to Donna over a period of probably 4 or 5 months. And she is a remarkable researcher, and she has uncovered things. I was joking with her at one point. I said, the difference between you and me is I sleep odd hours, and you don't sleep at all. And I don't think she does. And I was just joking with her, and she wrote back later on. She said, yeah, you're right, I don't hardly sleep. But she's constantly digging and digging and digging, and she's had some remarkable success. And it's the kind of information that if you care to pay attention to it, if it's happening at one county in Florida, odds are it's happening in other counties and quite possibly your county. And we will perhaps learn how you can even investigate what's going on in your county and how you can begin to perceive what your county officials are actually doing. And if you can find some of the evidence that Donna has discovered, if you can find it at your level, it might be enough where you can perhaps cut some of the costs of operating your county, cut some of your tax liabilities. So we'll see. In any case, Donna will be here tomorrow, and we will talk to her at that time, barring the unforeseen. She's scheduled to be here tomorrow.
So, and I didn't forget, you will get the special.
Huh. All right, I'll get the special. unless, here's something I need to warn you about. This is from the Washington Times. Headline is, Best and Brightest Will Be Brought In to Fix Obamacare Website Bugs. The Obama administration said Sunday that it's calling in the best and the brightest technicians to help fix the bug-laden federal website that has tarnished the rollout of the new health care law and galvanized the overhaul's fiercest critics in Congress. In a blog post, the Department of Health and Human Services struck in a contrite tone after boasting that the site, which is supposed to help people in 36 states sign up for private coverage, has received innumerable fails since its debut on October 1st. Now, they're looking for the best and the brightest, Melody. So I'm waiting for the call. Maybe that Obama's going to want me to come in there to fix his website. And if he does, then I may not be here for the program tomorrow. You understand?
Mm.
Uh-huh. You don't think Obama will be calling me, Melody? Is that what you're...
My biggest question is, the best and the brightest they're bringing in to fix. Well, why in the hell didn't they get the... I'm sorry. Why in the heck didn't they get the best and the brightest to begin with? They spent over, what, $200 million?
I don't know.
I mean, they spent millions and millions of dollars to get this set up, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous.
And it's also one of those situations that gives you a clue to what may actually happen when Obamacare rolls out and it becomes implemented. It's not a surprise. You have a program this massive, you can expect there are going to be problems. That can't be a surprise. But on the other hand, it shouldn't be a surprise to Washington either. They should sit back and say, look, there's going to be a bunch of bugs in this thing. So they might have started this out, you know, on a smaller level and trying to serve a dozen or 20 states or whatever. Maybe they start with one state, start with a few counties, get this thing going and get the bugs out before it go, you know, on your beta program before you go national.
What was the urgency? Why didn't they roll it out in a much smaller manner? Do they need the money that? Are they that desperate? Is this a sense of desperation?
I think we're just. I don't think it was desperation. I think it was just the kind of arrogance that has come to characterize government. They've got this idea they can do almost anything, and all they need to do is snap their fingers and make a wish, and it's going to happen for them. And it turns out that there are practical realities that can't be overcome just by wishful thinking. Someone has to actually know what they're doing. And that's a concept that is often foreign to the thinking of people in government. Not important that they do something right, it's just important that they do something. So here we are, they've done something. And it hasn't worked out well, and we'll see where it's going.
And yet they fought the battle instead of delaying it. Hmm. Like this whole debacle, they just, no, we need it today, we need it now. And I think it has a lot to do, well, actually, they have to have it going because all these dates and everything, all these insurance companies like myself, and so I've talked to so many people who've been canceled now. Since we made this announcement and talking to people here where I live and so forth, so many people have been canceled with pretty much the same letter. They couldn't delay it anymore because we're getting canceled. They can't turn around and reinstate us. So it is something that they have to do. They don't have a choice but to go on. My question is, what happens to us if we're unable to get it because it's not working? Where does our health insurance expire? And then we're going without health insurance. So a lot of questions, and we'll see how this all plays out.
I think this is one of the things I'm looking into. I'm thinking about becoming a witch doctor.
Mm.
I think there's going to be a demand for it after the Obamacare turns out they can't heal anybody. They can't even get organized. They can't heal anyone. I think there's going to be a renewed interest in witch doctors and shamans and it might be an opportunity to start a school. Maybe we could start the discount gold and silver school of shamans for health care. What do you think, Melody?
Maybe.
Probably not, huh?
No, probably not.
All right.
Today, J.P. Morgan agreed to, I believe, a $13 billion deal with the Justice Department for the real estate debacle, and they're I'm not sure if they've they weren't able to get out of their criminal. I think the J.P. Morgan tried to get in to include criminal charges would not apply, but that was turned down.
Yeah, we've got an article here. U.S. deal with J.P. Morgan followed a crucial call. This is from Deal Book, and part of it. Part of it reads, the $13 billion deal might also embolden the Justice Department to set a precedent for the agency's investigations of Wall Street. Using the J.P. Morgan case as a template and relying on a law that extends the legal deadline for filing certain financial fraud cases from 5 years to 10 years, the Justice Department is planning to take action against other big banks suspected of selling troubled mortgage securities. Now, what are they doing here? What are we talking about? Well, first off, we're talking about they are concerned that investors have invested in securities sold by J.P. Morgan Chase, and these securities turned out to be unusually risky. And the reason they go on here, they say for J.P. Morgan, once known as Washington's favorite bank, the deal would be a stunning reversal of fortune. When credit flowed freely in the run-up to the crisis, that would be 2008 and so on, banks routinely bundled subprime and other risky loans into securities that they sold to investors. What are they telling us here, Melody? They're telling us that they said, oh, we've got a dozen eggs to sell you people. Here in this little egg carton, got a dozen eggs, and nine of the eggs might be okay, but three of them are rotten eggs. And they're betting that they could mix those three rotten eggs in with the nine good ones and sell them to the people buying a dozen eggs, and nobody would figure out what happened. They were bundling subprime and other risky loans into securities that might otherwise be solid. Now, that's not what it expressly says in Washington in the deal book. article, but nevertheless, that's the implication. Apparently, J.P. Morgan is being prosecuted civilly based on the losses suffered by those who invested in J.P. Morgan Chase's toxic securities, but not on the basis, they're not being prosecuted on the basis of homeowners who were defrauded by banks that sold their mortgages but continued to collect mortgage payments. Right, there's a whole nother level of fraud involved in our mortgage racket that's existed for the last 15, maybe 20 years in this country. And the government, as at least as indicated by this argument, is primarily concerned about the investors. It's not concerned about the home buyers. When homeowners fell into foreclosure and the investments soured, it caused billions of dollars of losses for investors. In turn, government authorities began to question whether the banks properly warned investors of the risks. Did you give the investors proper notice when you sold them the dozen eggs that three of the eggs were rotten? And the answer is no, they didn't. Now, J.P. Morgan Chase is going to deny that. They claim that they've given them sufficient warning. But what we're dealing with here is an illustration of the problem faced by everyone who invests in paper debt instruments whose value is not intrinsic, but is instead derived from some underlying source. People invested in these securities sold by J.P. Morgan Chase. The value of these securities depended on the people continuing to pay their mortgage payments because their mortgages were bundled up in these securities. If the people who were paying the mortgages stopped paying, and they thought that could never happen, but it did, if they stopped paying, guess what? The securities suffered a serious decline in value and perhaps became worthless. Now, the reason I bring this to everyone's attention is this is an illustration of the kind of problem that's being faced by everyone who currently invests in paper debt instruments. We see what happened in the case of these securities that had been sold by J.P. Morgan Chase. There's a $13 billion settlement involved on this. Huh? Pretty serious. Biggest settlement corporations have ever paid, and I don't doubt they should be paying settlements that are 10 times that, but regardless, it's the biggest to date. It flows from a fraud perpetrated against investors. This fraud is based on the investors believing that the securities had a reliable value when in fact there was great risk, inherent risk in these paper documents. And I'm arguing that the same kind of risk is inherent in virtually every paper debt instrument that you can own. Get yourself some stocks, get yourself some bonds, buy them, right? But you're still holding a piece of paper that has no intrinsic value. Your piece of paper is a derivative. It derives its value from some underlying source. Could be people who pay mortgages, could be people who mine gold, could be people who build automobiles. There can be a number of different sources for this derivative value, but if the value is not intrinsic in the document itself, it is dependent upon those sources that give it value. In the case of J.P. Morgan Chase, those sources failed. People stopped paying their mortgages. The pieces of paper became worthless. The people who owned the pieces of paper therefore wanted to sue J.P. Morgan Chase, and eventually the government even checked in and said, look, this was a bad deal and you're going to have to pay a $13 billion fine. Now, this contrasts to people who own gold. The value of the gold or silver or land, there's a number of things, there's other things that you can buy besides gold and silver, but they are the two most liquid. The value is intrinsic in the particular coin. The metal itself has intrinsic value. It's not derivative in the sense that paper is derivative. And therefore, you own that piece. You get that gold instead of stock sold by J.P. Morgan or securities sold by J.P. Morgan, and you have something that is much more reliable. And it will be much more reliable than the rest of the stocks and bonds that are currently on the markets. And for me, the story of J.P. Morgan Chase is just an illustration of the idea that we harp on a regular basis, that you want to stay away from that paper, if at all possible. If you're going to do paper, do it for a short time, at most. All right? Don't expect it for long term, because I don't think it's going to last long term, because there's too much debt. All those debts can't be paid. It means much of the paper must be found to be valueless. When that happens, people who are in paper are going to lose their assets. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, 1-800-375-4188. That's the number at Discount Gold and Silver. Give Melody a call for looking for gold coins, silver coins, collectibles, bullion. 1-800-375-4188. What else, Melody? What's next?
You know, during the break, we were talking about what did J.P. Morgan do or didn't do in order to get the government after them. I mean, they certainly helped them out with the purchase of Bear Stearns. And, you know, it's not like they were the only bank that that had this situation, you know, were they the leaders of the pack? And this weekend, Bloomberg came out and reported that J.P. Morgan Chase & Company had a deal to sell One Chase Manhattan Plaza to Fosun International, and it would be the largest purchase of a New York building by a Chinese builder. By a Chinese buyer, showing how the Asian investors' growing appetite for U.S. real estate. And we talked about China and their assets and what their assets were. And we talked about it being, of course, real estate here in the U.S. So you have them buying a 725 building from J.P. Morgan Chase. This year, a group including Zhang Xin, the billionaire co-founder of Soho China, took a stake in Midtown Manhattan's General Motors building. Greenland Holding Group, a Shanghai-based state-owned developer, agreed this month to buy a 70% share of Atlantic Yards, and that is a residential and commercial project in Brooklyn. And there's been a series of trophy transactions in key cities around the U.S. that have been done by the Chinese in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles. I mean, there have been some smaller acquisitions in other markets around the country. But this Fosun purchase is the biggest of an entire building in New York by a Chinese builder.
Which tells us what? It tells us that the Chinese are... Sure they are. They're dumping dollars. And what are they buying with them? Are they buying stocks? Are they buying bonds? Are they buying paper debt instruments? Or are they buying tangible products? They're buying gold. We know that. They've hauled more gold into China in the last year. I think it's a record year for them in the past year, past 12 months, and likely to continue. They are also buying land. They're buying buildings, all right? They are acting according to the very kind of advice, the very same kind of advice that I'm giving people on the program when I'm saying, look, you got to get out of these pieces of paper and get into something tangible. You can get into gold, you can get into silver, you can get into land, you can get into, but something tangible. The paper is going to go up in smoke. Not necessarily this year, not necessarily next year. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. It's got to happen. The debt is too great to ever be repaid. It means most of the paper has to be repudiated in value. It means that if you want to protect your wealth, you have to put your whatever paper you have now into something tangible. That's what China's doing. They're doing it. And they do it on a level where they buy $650 million properties. I'm doing it on a level where I buy some gold coins. But the principle is the same. And if you people believe that the Chinese have a clue to what they're doing in terms of investing, you might want to emulate them and say, look, all right, I'm going to get rid of some more of my paper and I'm going to get something tangible. Same story. Different. It's a different story, but it's the same lesson.
You know what I find interesting? China leads all foreign countries in New York property investment this year with $1.37 billion of acquisitions. And that does not include this latest transaction with the Chase Manhattan Plaza. Next is Canada, which kind of surprised me. Next is Canada with $1.19 billion. So I thought that was interesting.
See, that's where we are today, Melody. Perhaps the Chinese will save us. Perhaps the Canadians will save us from the Chinese, and the Mexican illegals will save us from the Muslims. Why is it we can't save ourselves? And the answer is because we've been foolish enough to trust management of our economy and government to people in positions of power in Washington and major corporations who don't give a damn about the Constitution or the average American. And because we've trusted them, we've played the fool, we're going to pay the fool's price.
You know, that building has 4,000 employees of J.P. Morgan, and they're actually going to relocate them.
Where are they sending them? To Hong Kong or Taiwan or Peking? Where will they be?
There's no comment about that, but so they are getting kicked out. They will be moving 4,000 employees. So I find it hard to believe they might relocate them somewhere in New York, but who knows?
Do you hear a voice in a radio program in the background? Melody, did you?
No, I don't.
Well, I did. And I'm going to guess it was Frank, or else I'm having one of my episodes together. Melody, hear those voices.
Did you
voices.
Take your medication today, Al?
No, I haven't taken my medication yet today. I'm actually hearing voices or Frank is doing this to me. I think Frank, the producer, is doing this intentionally just to mess with my mind. Is that true, Frank? Tell me, Frank. Tell us the truth. Come on. There, he said it. Did anyone hear it?
Didn't you say it was a girl, though?
Yeah, the first one was a girl, but, Frank has a certain amount of talent as a ventriloquist and an imitator and the rest of that sort of thing. And,
but, you know, while we're on China, I saw an article today by Reuters, and everybody talks about global warming and all this big move, we got to do this. Well, Beijing, they had all but shut down one of northeastern China's largest cities today, forcing schools to close, closing the airport because of their air pollution crisis. And I mean, you see pictures where it's like fog. You can't even see across the street. You can't even see 5 feet in front of you.
Well, the stunning statistic.
And it is. Go ahead.
Well, the one that I thought was stunning, this has been out for a couple of years, and most people have probably heard this in the past. But California had done a good job about cleaning up its own air, and pollution was down significantly in California. And about 3 years ago, my recollection, maybe two, they began to detect increases in pollution, air pollution in California. And they started working to figure out where the heck is this coming from. And what they finally realized, it was coming from China. China produces enough air pollution that it can cross the Pacific Ocean and adversely affect the air quality in California. Now, that's saying something. It's one thing to produce enough pollution where you can get a city to look a little brown or gray or even foggy. But when you can produce enough air pollution that it can cross the Pacific Ocean and affect another country, you're generating some pollution. And it's one of the great problems China has to face. You know, what are they going to do about their air pollution? And what are they going to do about the consequences of that pollution, which have to include a shortened life expectancy? It has to include certain problems that are will affect the children, the Chinese children, perhaps, and stunt their growth, or who knows what it's going to do to them. But they have just incredible levels of pollution. And we have to wonder if they can survive as a nation with that much filth in the air. So we'll watch and see. It's another one of those reasons why China, despite all of its apparent strength and apparent growth, they still have a lot of trouble. And they have troubles that will not be easily overcome. You know, I can bet that because of the air pollution, the Chinese people may have a reduced personal immunity to diseases. Now, I don't know that's true. I haven't heard that before, and it may be completely mistaken. It's just speculation on my part, but it strikes me as reasonable. If it were true, it means that the Chinese might be more susceptible to another epidemic of the bird flu or whatever. They might. And as closely packed, as tightly packed as they are in China, you can imagine that if a disease breaks loose in that country that's highly communicable, and their own immunity says their own immunities are compromised by the pollution, you could see a plague take place in China that could... No telling how many Chinese could die. No telling, you know, if it was 10%, that's not inconceivable. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's not inconceivable. What happens to the other 90% when they all of a sudden have to shovel up 10% of the population and find a place to bury them? What happens to the businesses that lose 10% of their help? You know, the point I'm making is that China is a long way from being a stable investment. They may be making money now, but doesn't mean they're going to make money forever. It doesn't mean they'll be the best place to locate your businesses forever. And even the third world, you know, I wonder how many American industries have relocated to China. And I wonder how many of the executives that have gone over there with their industries. I wonder how many are pleased to be in China. Are they pleased to be there with their families? Are they pleased to be exposed to that level of pollution? I wonder how they deal with it. I wonder what their attitudes are.
Well, You have a good point there, because there's a lot of resentment over the privileges that the politicians, the political people, people of wealth, because they're also dealing with a rise in inequality in that part of the world. So you have the media that's running stories describing the expensive air purifiers. Purifiers that government officials enjoy, both in their homes and offices.
Yeah.
So you have special organic farms to cater to those that have been fortunate enough to gather the wealth that is being created over there. So again, you have this big change, and you have the lower end of the folks who are saying, "Hey,
what about us?
What about us?
Yeah, we're working. We're kicking in on this situation. How come we don't get any protection?"
So, you know, certainly that big risk of that you described, certainly, you know, for food safety and quality and immune systems. I mean, it's just not like, you know, some bad pollution. That is extreme pollution.
No, it's almost like living in the tailpipe of an automobile.
Yes.
Right? It's almost that bad. It's not that bad, but it's almost that bad. And when they start to die, when people start to die, if there were a natural disaster, bird flu goes after the Chinese people and knocks out a bunch of them, how certain can anyone be that the survivors will not blame the government?
Of course not.
And foment a revolution? In the aftermath, you might have a catastrophe, and who knows, 10% of the people get wiped out. Are the other 90% going to sit back and say, well, we'll continue to breathe in all this pollution while you top 5% live large?
It's China we're talking about. Of course they will. Of course they will.
Maybe not. You never know. Will. They've had revolutions in the
Of course
past.
They can Take always... They can. No. I don't think they would. Not to the.
I won't argue it's probable, but I'm just saying it's a consideration.
Not to the way China has built up their military and everything. You know, they'd squash those people in a minute. If they get sick, they can sign up for Obamacare.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be another thing. That would be a good thing. In order to wipe out our debt to China, perhaps we can cut a deal and we say, listen. Instead of you buying our land and our businesses in this country,
sign up for
Obamacare. Why don't we just give you Obamacare? How about that?
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah,
I think it's another one of those ideas. This, you know, time has come, Melody. It might be time to start foisting Obamacare off on the rest of the world. And we'll just muddle along with our doctors and nurses as we've had in the past. We'll give the rest of you the benefit of Obamacare.
The New York Times had an article about China's arms industry makes global inroads. I mean, since we're on China, we may as well stay there.
Well, we can. What they're just arguing is that Turkey has recently contracted to buy new military systems. And the world was much surprised when it turned out that instead of buying them from the United States or even some of the European manufacturers, they bought these new systems from China. And China is seeking to increase the quality and reduce the price of military equipment, arms. Furthermore, they make no demands on other government status and internal policies. They'll sell to you. You got the money, they'll sell to you. End of story. Well, it does not bode well for people who want to invest in the U.S. military industrial businesses. We're going to see some serious competition from China, where they are going to compete and they're going to be selling tanks or rockets or drones or whatever at a lower price. And it means that our military industries will not be able to sell effectively overseas, and eventually they may even have a problem selling domestically. They're going to face more competition. It means they should make less profits, and their stocks will become less valuable. We're out of time. We'll be back mañana. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.